Today, instrument warning. Is a market correction incoming? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well, this post covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update. We start in the US, across to Europe and Asia, and then in Australia, we cover commodities and crypto along the way. Something simply does not add up. US equities surged higher in their final session of the week, bolstered by hopes of peace talks between the US and Iran, and on a surge in the shares of Intel, which has renewed optimism in the AI trade. But this seems to belie concerns about the fraught geopolitics, how long energy supplies might be disrupted, and the long-term economic damage that comes from that. The prospect of an inflation shock has prompted traders to price in rate hikes, particularly in Europe, and to lower expectations of rate cuts in the US. Sure, both the US and Iran are sending envoys to Pakistan after the negotiations reached an impasse a week back, but it's unclear that there will be any direct talks. So it seems the traditional global asset correlations that collapsed when the war in the Middle East erupted remain broken, leaving investors to piece together strategies to trade the road to resolution with, frankly, a faulty instrument panel. Indeed, the Bank of England expects stock markets around the world to fall as share prices do not reflect the many risks facing the global economy, its deputy governor told the BBC this week. Sarah Breeden said, "There's a lot of risk out there, and yet asset prices are at all-time highs. We expect there will be an adjustment at some point. The thing that really keeps me awake at night is the likelihood of a number of risks crystallizing at the same time. A major macroeconomic shock, confidence in private credit going, AI and other risky valuations readjust. What happens in that environment? And are we prepared for it?" she asked. It's unusual, actually, for a scene and a figure at the bank to be so forthright on market movements. But the global MSCI share index was last up 0.46% to 1,072, and the Stoxx 600 in Europe did fall 2.54% across the week, while the Asia shares excluding Japan rose 2.37% on Friday to be up 15% over the past month and up new highs. The ASX 200, traditionally viewed as a defensive bet in times of volatility, fell for a fourth straight day on Friday and remains 5% below the record high reached late in February. Brent oil was up 16.54% across the week, though prices did dip as optimism over potential US-Iran peace talks offset supply concerns. It was last 105.88. Natural gas futures were up 15.71% to $44.78, and gold slid by 2.84% across the week to be at $4,740 on the futures. But the damage to the global economy has already been done, as JP Morgan showed in perhaps one of the most important charts in the world right now. The daily reduction in global inventories by month. It is falling off a cliff, and it's going to take months to recover once the war has really stopped, whenever that is. The loss of momentum in negotiations came despite the announcement of ceasefire and extensions between the US and Iran and Israel and Lebanon, largely due to elevated tensions surrounding that critical Strait of Hormuz and an ongoing US naval blockade of Iranian ports and coastline. The choke point has remained essentially shut and has seen several attacks on ships and seizures of vessels from both sides. Iran has called the American blockade an act of war and a violation of the ceasefire with the US and has called for its lifting before any more peace talks happen. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump has said the blockade will stay in place until a deal has been reached. So, yep, stalemate. And yet, market participants look past the Middle East conflict with a focus on the first quarter earnings season, which has so far actually been quite a solid one for corporate America. In New York, the S&P 500 was up 0.8% to 7,164.29. Actually, it rose as high as 7,168.59, which was driven higher by information technology. Nvidia was 4.3% higher, taking the $5 trillion market value back. And the S&P 500 has risen 4 weeks in a row, advancing 12.5%. Among the companies hitting 52-week or record highs on Friday were Amazon, Taiwan Semiconductor, and AMD. The Nasdaq Composite rallied 1.6% to 24,836. It had earlier reached 24,854. For the week, the S&P 500 gained 0.6%, the Nasdaq rose 1.5%, and the Dow fell 0.4%. Semiconductors, one of the market's strongest performers of the year, continues to rally. The Philadelphia SE Semiconductor Index advanced 4.3% to extend its record run of gains to 18 consecutive sessions. And in company news, Intel jumped 23.6%, setting a record high early in the session after the chip maker delivered a sales forecast that shattered Wall Street expectations. Google will invest $10 billion in Anthropic, with another $30 billion potentially to follow, strengthening the relationship between two companies that are at once partners and rivals in the race to build AI. Microsoft, Meta, Amazon, Alphabet, and Apple are all set to report next week. Investors were also buoyed by news that the US Department of Justice has dropped its criminal probe of the Federal Reserve, easing pressure on Chairman Jerome Powell and opening a path for its successor, Kevin Walsh, to take charge in middle of May, when Powell's term is set to end. Actually, the first quarter reporting season has hit its full stride, with 139 other companies in the S&P 500 having reported. Of those, 81% have beaten earnings estimates. And analysts now see aggregate year-on-year S&P 500 earnings growth of 16.1% up from 14.4% growth projected at the beginning of the quarter. But then, on analyst conference calls, CEOs are increasingly providing downbeat guidance due to spiking fuel costs resulting from the war in Iran. Consumer products company Procter & Gamble warned on Friday that it expects roughly a $1 billion hit to its fiscal position in 2027 profit because of the war-related surge in energy prices. The dollar dipped, but held a weekly gain, as war uncertainty kept investors on edge. The dollar index, which measures the greenback against a basket of currencies, including the yen and the euro, fell 0.32% to 98.51, with the euro up 0.3% to 1.1718, and against the Japanese yen, the dollar weakened 0.19% to 159.36. US Treasury yields dipped on hopes that the US-Iran peace talks could take place over the weekend, bolstering confidence that the war could be close to ending. Just don't hold your breath. The yield on benchmark US 10-year notes fell to 4.302. The 30-year bond fell to 4.913%, and the 2-year note, which moves in step with interest rate expectations for the Federal Reserve, fell to 3.78%. Typically, stocks and bond yields move together, as investors tend to hedge economic growth worries, which hit stocks, by buying bonds, sending yields lower, and vice versa. But now it seems that relationship has been much more erratic since the pandemic, actually, as higher inflation and government debt undermines the ability of bonds to act as a hedge against equity risk. It's worth recalling the International Monetary Fund, in a pre-war blog back in February, warned that investors and policymakers must rethink risk management for a new era where traditional hedges fail. Gold actually has ditched its safe haven credentials too since the war began, moving unusually close with equities and even volatile crypto. It remains 10% below the pre-war levels. Gold usually boasts a robustly negative correlation to the dollar. When volatility picks up to the point where investors ditch stocks, bonds and other markets, the dollar emerges as the main beneficiary, as has been the case during the war. But traders are now also looking ahead to a busy week for central banks, with the Federal Reserve, the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, and the Bank of England among those set to announce policy decisions. The European Central Bank is expected to hike rates twice this year, while the Federal Reserve leans perhaps towards a cut, but we'll see. Yet the euro has barely recovered its war-driven losses. European stocks slipped on Friday as hopes for an immediate deal to end the Iran war cooled, and concerns lingered over oil supply disruptions. The pan-European stocks 100 fell 0.6%, the DAX in Germany dipped 0.1%, and the CAC 40 in France showed 0.8%. Shares of SAP climbed after the German software group posted a 70% jump in first quarter profit that topped estimates, largely thanks to its strength in the cloud division. UK's main stock indices recorded weekly losses as investors assessed tentative signs of renewed US-Iran peace talks, while a Bank of England warning that global stocks could face pressure weighed on sentiment. The blue chip FTSE recorded its first weekly drop in 5 weeks, erasing all the gains since the US-Iran ceasefire announcement earlier this month. It declined 0.8%. The mid-cap FTSE 250 also slipped 0.8%. Heavyweight banks Barclays and HSBC fell 0.9% and 1.3% respectively. Pharma giant AstraZeneca slipped 3.7%, and its peer GSK dropped 2.7%, sending the pharma sector 3% lower. British retail sales rose by 0.7% in March, according to data on Friday, but major retailers Tesco and Sainsbury's both warned this week that persistent Middle East tensions are likely to cloud their earnings outlook on higher costs. That said, retailer stocks rose 0.1%. They were among the few gainers on the benchmark. Asian stocks fell on Friday as technology shares lost momentum amid stalled US peace talks with Iran and a renewed surge in oil prices, while investors weighed slightly stronger inflation figures from Japan. South Korea's KOSPI edged down 0.4% to 6,475.63 after hitting a record high of 6,557 earlier on. The benchmark was up more than 4% this week, with gains in, yes, heavyweight chip-making stocks. China's Shanghai Composite Index fell 0.5%, while the blue-chip Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 slipped 0.6%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng traded 0.5% lower. And in Japan, government data released on Friday showed that core consumer prices, which excludes fresh food, rose 1.8% year-on-year in March. That's up from 1.6% in February, but it's still below the Bank of Japan's 2% target. The Bank of Japan is set to meet next week, where the central bank is expected to keep interest rates unchanged, but reportedly will signal a willingness to hike rates later. The Nikkei 225 edged up 0.4% after hitting a record high on Thursday, while the broader topics ticked 0.1% lower. The Nikkei 225 rose 1.5% for the week, with tech gains and earnings supporting growth. India's Nifty 50 fell 1.87% across the week, though, as the fallout from the Gulf War continues to bite there. Australian shares fell for a fourth consecutive day to end the week down 1.79%, a horror week, actually, in defensive stocks, and a fresh round of AI jitters in the technology sector dragged the local market down as the war in the Middle East continued to foment uncertainty among investors. On Friday, the ASX 200 fell just a little, 0.08%, 8,786.5, to close at a fresh two-week low. The biggest loser on Friday was critical resource miner IGO, where shares dived 17.92% to close at $7.01. That followed the company posting disappointing quarterly production and sales volumes on Friday, as well as cutting production guidance for its Green Bushes operation, which is the world's largest hard rock lithium mine. The healthcare sector dragged the local market down with a 6.54% drop for the week. Cochlear pared back its 40% drop earlier in the week following a sharp earnings downgrade to close up 2.47% to 97.35. CSL rose 0.78% to $130 on Friday, but it's still trading at lows last touched back in 2017. The ASX Financials Index finished the week down 2.92% as investors await next week's quarterly inflation print, which could prove decisive for another Reserve Bank interest rate rise next month. All the banks were down, including CBA, Westpac, and NAB, but Macquarie was at 232.28. The materials sector also fell 1.01% on Friday to finish the week down 2.08%, adding to the pressure on defensive stocks. Information technology ended the week flat after WiseTech Global and Xero pared back earlier losses to close up 0.14% and 0.3% respectively. NextDC rose 1.36% over the day following a fresh debt raise in the bond market. An entertainment hospitality provider EVT dropped 7.25% to $12.67 after providing a trading update which noted growth in its hotels division, which is a major source of group earnings, would be only marginally higher than last year. DigiCo Infrastructure rose 6.94% to $2.31, and Fortescue fell 5.67% to $19.78 after it announced an additional $1 billion investment in green energy infrastructure in its quarterly report. Suncorp rose 4.47% to $70.05 after announcing the purchase of a 5-year aggregate reinsurance cover and advising that anticipated underlying ITR, that's a key profitability measurement, would be towards the upper end of its guidance range. Actually, a range of factors are weighing on the local market. They include the start of a rate rising cycle by the Reserve Bank of Australia, the country's high vulnerability to the global fuel crisis caused by the Iran war, and a string of profit downgrades headlined this week by hearing implant maker Cochlear's earnings shocker, which triggered a 40% share price plunge. Other ASX companies to warn that surging energy prices would hit their bottom line included Qantas, engineering group Worley, A2 Milk, packaging company Aurora, waste management group Cleanaway, and logistics business Cube. The Aussie was at 71.43 US cents and 52.82 UK pence. The 2-year Treasury was at 4.666%, up just a little for the week, suggesting markets remain firm on RBA rate hikes again, despite the economic fallout from the Middle East. Bitcoin slipped on Friday, but losses were capped as risk appetite was given a boost by more planned peace talks between the US and Iran. The world's largest cryptocurrency was also headed for a fourth straight weekly gain supported by sustained institutional flows. Bitcoin was last down 0.9% to $77,609 US dollars. Data from Soso Value showed that US-listed spot Bitcoin exchange-traded funds continue to attract strong inflows, with nearly $1 billion in net inflows recorded over the past week, marking one of the strongest weekly intakes since January. Cumulative net inflows across Bitcoin ETFs have now climbed above $58 billion, with total assets hovering around the $100 billion mark. It's come a long way up in a relatively short period of time, as it's up around 30% since early February. So the question is, could that be time for some profit taking, particularly as Bitcoin has yet to break above 80,000 US? Elsewhere, Morgan Stanley Investment Management rolled out a government money market fund tailored for stablecoin issuers looking to hold reserve assets in compliance with the Genius Act. The fund sits within the Morgan Stanley Institutional Liquidity Fund Trust. It targets payment stablecoin issuers that need an eligible vehicle for the reserves backing their tokens. Though non-issuers may also invest, the firm said on Thursday, the portfolio aims to preserve capital and maintain a stable $1 net asset value while providing daily liquidity and current income. It invests exclusively in cash, US Treasury bills, notes, and bonds, with remaining maturities of 93 days or less, along with certain overnight repurchase agreements backed by Treasury securities. Altcoins were mixed on Friday, with most of them trading within tight ranges. World number two crypto Ethereum fell 0.7% to $2,318.60. Next week, the focus will be on the March and first quarter CPI results, thanks to the ABS. NAB expects the first quarter trimmed mean inflation of 0.9% quarter over quarter and 3.5% over the year, in line with the RBA's February statement on monetary policy. We expect the March headline to rise sharply to 4.7% year on year, with trimmed mean inflation at 0.25% month on month, they said, which is equivalent to 3.3% year over year. Additional price signal will come from the trade price index on Thursday and the PPI data on Friday. Private sector credit is due on Thursday, alongside the final April S&P Global Manufacturing PMI on Friday. Five major central banks are set to meet next week: the Bank of Japan on Tuesday, the Federal Reserve and Bank of Canada on Wednesday, and the European Central Bank and the Bank of England on Thursday, all expected to hold. But this fundamental gap between market pricing and the real economy will eventually bite. As the Bank of England noted, we could see a number of risks crystallizing at the same time: a major macroeconomic shock, confidence in private credit going, AI and other risky valuations readjusting. Markets, frankly, are not prepared for such a perfect storm, which means they are going to fall at some point. But of course, the key question is, when? I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.